Scarlett Johansson exits the film Rub and Tug, and a discussion of strong female characters in film on episode 109 of the Cinema Psycho Show. Let's hit that theme music.
Oh, goody, goody, here it comes.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh, my God, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Ryan, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show, the madhouse for film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Brian Connaughton, joined by my fellow co-hosts and filmmakers, John and Lane Woolscroft.
Oh no, Rub and Tug was supposed to be the name of our two-man off-Broadway show, Brian.
Aw, damn.
You what did are we not gonna do disappoint.
What, did someone take it?
Yeah.
Ah, shit.
Well, we'll get there.
We'll get there.
What episode are we on?
We are on episode, what are we on now? What are we on?
109.
109. Yeah, episode 109. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about, one, the controversy surrounding, well, no longer, Scarlett Johansson playing a transgendered person in an upcoming film.
I think it's transgender person,
Is
Brian.
It a transgender person?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think the ED, I think that's incorrect.
Okay, I'm wrong on that.
That's okay.
Let's all be very careful.
I mean, I think it's okay to kindly and politely call someone, you know, out for
right.
if they do it wrong. I mean, trying to be good over here,
that's
dude.
That's cool. So we'll be talking about that controversy as well as something that I think, Lane, you've been salivating about, and that is the representation of women in film.
Woot! Ready?
Broads in cinema.
Oh, I'm going to punch you in the face.
So that's what this episode is going to be about. And especially we've got, like, I know John and I have our list of what we consider to be strong characters in film who are female. But Lane might disagree with every one of them.
I think we're going to have an awesome discussion. I'm super excited, guys.
John, do you want to give us some of the details on this controversy surrounding Scarlett Johansson?
Yeah. So there was an outcry for there's an upcoming movie called Rub and Tug, which is about a Pittsburgh, of all things, massage parlor owner and crime kingpin Dante Tex Gill, who was transgendered. I don't know if this person...
Transgender.
Excuse me.
Yep. Sorry. Like I said,
I got it wrong. I heard what you just said, and I still got it wrong.
Did you hear me though?
I don't listen when you talk.
I know.
Oh.
I know.
But you know, it's based on a true story, and they cast Scarlett Johansson in the lead role for this, which, because she is
Scarlett
not
Johansson.
Famous.
Yeah. There was an uproar about her playing this character.
Well, and possibly
somebody of more representation for that.
And rightfully so, I would say. I mean, that's a huge contention in Hollywood right now where, you know, we're starting to tell more trans stories, but we're not hiring trans people to tell them. And I think that that's a huge mistake.
Well, ScarJo said, hell no, I won't be in the show.
And she's right? Out, you know? I that's love right. it. She exited the project. I think that that's pretty awesome that she decided that, you know, that it was better told by someone else. And now I hope they hire someone who's trans instead of like all this. And then they just pick somebody else because Hollywood is stupid.
Well, I mean, I'm looking at the CNN Entertainment article about this. And they made mention of Ryan Murphy's FX drama Pose, which featured the largest ever cast of transgender actors in a series with regular roles on television. And I guess a lot of people pointed that and said, why can't you pull someone from that?
It's not like there aren't actors available, you know. Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Well, just to play devil's advocate here, thinking from Hollywood standpoint, like, we, you know, and I mean obviously this podcast directly, but also the viewing going public, see this as art, but Hollywood sees this as money. Mm-hmm. This is a business, and the problem is that we're not progressive, and we've not gone far enough that we really know, you know, actors in that community. So you need a Scarlett Johansson to put the butts in the seat to see the movie in the first place.
Yeah,
and that's the problem. If without Scarlett Johansson in this movie, if they cast essentially an unknown, this movie's going to bomb.
But do you see the problem inherent in that thinking? If that thinking continues forever,
mm-hmm.
name a famous transgender actor. Either of you, name a famous one.
Andrew James.
Friend of the show, Andrew James. I mean, yeah. The only one I can think of is Laverne Cox from Orange is the New Black. That's the only one I can think of. Yeah. That is the problem.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the transgender community is marginalized and is smaller than the rest of the population. But do you know what's not a small population? People who want to act. And the fact that there are no real famous besides, you know, a few names. I mean, I'm sure I'm overlooking a few, you know, besides Laverne. But if there are no famous actors in the transgender community right now, that is on Hollywood. And those people need to start to be hired so that a transgender actor can be the one that puts the butts in seats because they're so fucking famous. Do you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's the problem in this issue.
Well, this is also, I feel that this debate is similar to the voting for Republican or Democrat. Well, you know, you when you're getting stabbed either way, but you want to do the right thing and vote for like the Green Party or, you know, whatever. But the problem is, you know, they're not going to win.
I look at it from the standpoint of they're not going to win if you're not going to vote for them.
And this is a little bit different, I feel.
Well, and it's hard to take a stance like when you have people that are breathing down your neck for your bottom line, when you know this movie has to turn a profit, it's hard to take the right stand and do the right thing when you know that your job and your livelihood might be on the line whether this movie makes money or not. And with Scarlett Johansson, it does. I'm not saying it's right. I'm saying that this is how the capitalism of Hollywood works.
I get completely what you're talking about. Now, a lot of people have equated this to Scarlett Johansson's portrayal of the hero in Ghost in the Shell. Yeah. And I disagree with that because we mentioned on the show when that whole controversy was happening, because a lot of people were like, well, Scarlett Johansson is playing this character and this character's Asian and she's white and that's whitewashing. Now, I'll agree that is whitewashing, but at the same time, if you actually talked with people from Japan, they actually wanted Scarlett Johansson to play that character because she plays well over there. So it made sense on a business standpoint for her to play that character. I also think it helps for the fact that at least in the movie Ghost in the Shell, people who are American or have that Western European look, for the most part, are the robots. They're not humans, where it's the humans who are of Asian descent.
Well, and here's Cynical John again.
Cynical.
This is a Japanese character, right? So what you do is you cast a white American woman so that, because you know the Japanese audience will still like it, you know it's going to play over very well in the United States because, oh, we have somebody that looks like us. And you got to think about the Chinese market. They probably don't want a Japanese person in the movie. They will stomach more an American actress in the movie. You know, for the China, you know, the Chinese audience. So it's they're checking each box.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, it's for the bottom line, not for what's right.
And the interesting thing is that Scarlett Johansson's character in Ghost in the Shell, when she was alive, she was Asian. Mm-hmm. She was Japanese.
Yeah,
like before her brain got taken out and put into Scarlett Johansson's body, she was a Japanese actress. So they were able to, I think the whitewash thing blew up way too much.
You're now in a white woman. You have no choice but to get an Etsy account.
No, but you know what I mean? Like I think a lot of people took that too extreme and I don't think they're the same thing. I think this is more of an issue because of the fact, as Lane mentioned, you can't tell me that there aren't transgender actors and actresses out there. That they don't exist.
Especially talented ones. I mean, talent is everywhere.
And,
you know?
And more than likely, this type of film would be more in the realm of the art house indie type, one of the big art house indie type films that they would create. So I think they might, because this is an original movie, so obviously it's not a sequel, it's not a reboot. So it is going to fall in the realm of something that would basically get award bait.
Right.
So you're telling me you can't put an unknown in there, but maybe the supporting actors and actresses are maybe names like that. That's the thing is,
well, the reason
they could have done this.
Well, the reason the studio spends so much money and so much time into getting nominated for Oscars is that for a lot of those movies that they took a chance on, is the only way they make their money back.
Oh, yeah.
you know, some of these movies don't even come anywhere near. We're in Pittsburgh. You know, I mean, but we're a major city. But some of these movies don't even come anywhere near us until they're nominated for Oscars, and then they make all their money back. Yeah. So, I think that the movie would. The studio would have to really flex their muscles in hopes that this would get some kind of Oscar buzz or award buzz, or else it's going to
be a big... Well, that's what I'm saying, is this type tank. Of movie, for the most part, is the cookie-cutter award bait. Like, that's what this type of movie is. So for them to put a star like Scarlett Johansson in, it really doesn't make much sense. Because it's not a blockbuster. It's not going to be one of those movies that's going to rake in, you know, $200, $300, $400, $500 million in a weekend. It's going to play at small theaters. It's going to have an LA and New York run. And it's going to get enough that it can get nominated. So that's not to say that, I mean, that for me at least says more about the studio thinking more of that about this in a mainstream way than in an art house indie way. Like,
yeah.
You know,
well, and I mean, I just want to say, I know I say this a lot, guys, but, you know, for this, you know, the Ghost in the Shell, like, ultimately, our opinions don't mean anything because none of us are people of color and we are not, you know, part of the LGBT community. Like, so ultimately, our opinions don't really matter. It really matters that we listen to, you know, to people from the communities and they're in and get their take on everything. Yeah. So I think that's important to note as well. But I do think that, you know, Scarlett did make the right move by exiting from the film. And regardless of how it's marketed or how it's positioned, you know, I think that was smart on her part.
You know, but I don't know about you guys, but my mom always says, I want to go see the new Johnny Depp movie. Or I want to go see the new Robert De Niro movie. And the thing is, because there is a segment of people now. Granted, they're dying off. My mom's old as balls, but
wow. She will never learn how to listen to a podcast, so it's fine.
Yeah, she doesn't listen.
I tried to show my mom how to listen to a podcast. It didn't work out well.
Happens.
But you know, there is a whole segment of people that go see movies because of who's in them, and they don't even call them by the title. You know, like, I want to go see the new Johnny Depp movie. So I want to go see the new Scarlett Johansson movie. And what my fear is that because Hollywood is riddled with sex pervert scumbags, is that...
We got a sex pervert scumbag problem.
Yeah, right.
Is that they don't take any chances anymore. And that's why we get a Yogi Bear movie. You know, and that's why we get crap like that. Like, if this movie doesn't succeed because it doesn't have somebody like Scarlett Johansson in, I feel like the studio is going to get even... colder feet, and we're gonna see a Woody Woodpecker. Well, we probably did already, but you know, we're gonna see more sequels and more reboots and more soft reboots because they're gonna get cold feet on things that are challenging and interesting because it didn't turn a profit. And I think that is scary that we might not get films like this.
I see what you're saying.
Because they did the right thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have to take that risk, I think. You know, you have to do what's right and hope that the world catches up eventually, you know. So,
well, the other thing I want to make a little closing point here is that, you know, with these sorts of movies, the controversy surrounding it, even though it's unfortunate that it happened, it's only going to help it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I didn't know this movie existed until this controversy happened. Yeah. So when they do cast hopefully a transgender actor, actress in that, that people will go see it because they want to see what was all the hoopla, you know? Hopefully. So that's the one positive thing. It's almost the idea of there's no such thing as bad press, you know, because people are talking about you regardless.
Right.
So cool. So yeah, into our main discussion this week. Are about strong women in film.
Now, Brian, I feel like you and I should lead on this.
Oh, I don't think we can.
Oh, really? Okay.
No.
Sorry, John. Your wiener can't fix this today.
Well, I mean, my opinions are the most valuable
here. No, that's not true at all. Oh, okay. But thanks.
No. So, Lane, you wanna kick us off here?
Quiet, Elaine. The adults are talking.
Oh my god!
Holy
that's
shit!
That's enough out
She's
of you.
She's gonna strangle you with her microphone.
How
table?
Many Seriously? Of those jokes are we gonna get in this week?
Right. I don't know. How many times am I gonna nut tap you later? It's gonna be fun to find out. So yeah, so we definitely we're talking about strong women in film, and I kind of want to give my. my take on this, because one of the things that you guys might find surprising is that, you know, just because there's a strong female character in a film, we're not really having a discussion about feminist films in this venue. You know, we will sometime, I'm sure, but and I will mention, you know, a few and mention the distinction, but one thing I'll say is that just because we have a strong female character does not mean a film is feminist, and there's several that aren't. So I want to be clear that, you know, the absence of sexism in a film does not equal feminism. So even if there is a single strong character, that's not necessarily going to give the movie a pass. And you know, there are movies that I, you know, think that maybe aren't super feminist that do have strong female characters in them, and we can talk about the differences. You know, just for you all, dear listeners, to understand where we're coming from for some of this, we will be referencing something called the Bechdel test, and I'd like to break that down for you guys just in case anyone's not familiar.
I'm not familiar.
So the Bechdel test was named after American cartoonist Alison Bechdel, and it's a method for evaluating how women are portrayed in fiction. So not just film. This applies to fiction. This applies to comic books or graphic novels, you know, television, all of that. So anything that's in the realm of fiction, that's how this breaks down. And the Bechdel test asks if you know, there's two female characters in the film that talk to each other in a scene about something other than a man. So if you have two female characters and they're just talking about that D, doesn't count. Now, some iterations of the rule do also require that both of these characters have names, but that's not always the case. Now, that this is an interesting test, because what I think is interesting is that so many works of fiction fail, even this, but I don't think the Bechdel test is a very strong litmus test for feminism in a film, because a lot of what you can see, I mean, you could have two women, you know, that are talking about something very benign or, you know, something very innate, and that could technically pass the Bechdel test, even if they don't have any other feminist conventions to the film. There's a another interesting aspect to this called the Mako Mori test.
Okay.
And so that was a character in the movie Pacific Rim, and it was the only female character, or she was the only female character that had more than five lines and had a goal of her own that was separate from the male leads. And that was created by the actress who played her. And I think that this is a little bit better of a test, you know, to kind of differentiate between the idea of a woman being the subject of a film or the object of a film. And I think that objectifying is really important to note. You know, like I said, with the Bechdel test, it's a start, but the kinds of things that these movies pass for is ridiculous.
Well, I actually have a list up of here of movies, recent movies that have passed or not passed the Bechdel test. And I'll just take a look at a couple of these real quick. A Quiet Place, which I think is unfair because there's only three characters in them.
It's a fail. Did you say?
Yeah, two of them are women. Well, there's four characters, but two of them are women. But one of them is deaf, so they can't hold a conversation.
Well, I mean,
sign language.
If you count sign language, then possibly.
Annihilation, which I can't believe that movie was ignored, because, like, you know, all this hoopla over Ghostbusters, you know, the all-female Ghostbusters, like, Annihilation was actually a thoughtful movie that had intelligent women that were scientists, and they were pretty much the only cast in the whole movie.
Yeah.
And the movie was completely ignored.
Well, you said it was also not very good.
No. I said it was confusing and kind of complicated. The more time I had to think it over, like, yeah, it's actually very good.
Is it? I missed that one. I do want to check that out, you know, Redbox style or whatever.
Black Panther passed. Deadpool 2 did not.
Wow, big shocker there.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there was two female characters and they didn't talk to each other that much. The one girl just spoke to Deadpool only.
Yeah. Incredibles 2 passed the test. Still doesn't make it a good movie.
Yeah, John didn't like Incredibles 2.
Somehow Isle of Dogs passed, but there was only one female character in it, Scarlett Johansson of all people. Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom passed, and I'll tell you why. I was thinking in my head, like, because you don't count the dinosaurs, I suppose.
You don't count the dinosaurs.
They're all girls in Jurassic Park.
Yeah. I know. Do you look up the dinosaur skirts? Is that Ron Howard's daughter was like, hey, little girl, you want to come with us? Oh, I do, because the guy my dad or grandpa put in charge is evil. Okay, you can come with us now. Good, because I don't want to be with him anymore. And that counts.
And see, this is my exact point, that something that inane can count towards,
right,
you know, towards that. So I think that that's, you know, I think that's a shame that it's like that.
Guys, I got one more here, though, and I'll leave it. Solo, A Star Wars Story, fail.
There's only a single female character. Of course it failed.
Yeah, and she's not there's to be
technically
trusted.
Technically, there's two female characters. Well, Woody Harrelson's wife, girlfriend.
And the robot.
And, yeah, the
but
robot.
They never talk to each other, any of them.
No, they didn't. They
so, just,
they do talk, but it's about how it's about Lando. So it's about a dude.
Exactly. Exactly. So that's kind of, I think, what, you know, where we're kind of starting with this. You know, we do talk about, you know, horror movies a lot, and we don't see a lot of positive women, because I don't want to, and I know we're going to, you know, talk about this as well, but like, I don't think that we should always confuse the women as ass kicker trope. Like, just because a woman kicks ass does not mean she's a particularly feminist character. So John, I know you have some notes on that.
Yeah. Let's, before we jump into like good representations, it's more fun to talk about bad ones.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. Let's talk about some of the tropes that, that filmmakers constantly put women
right.
in. Yeah. Because like, I think the biggest problem here is, and I don't think I'm saying anything all that fascinating, is that, you know, the toxic patriarchy took over Hollywood, and most of the writers and directors are men because they made it that way. And then they write like male characters, and then all the women are their trophies. So that's just how movies are written. But there's
again objects.
Yeah, there's a thing called fridging, which I just recently found out about.
Oh, yeah. John, talk about this. This is interesting.
It's the idea of the disposable woman, or, you know, who is killed or hurt in order to encourage the man to go do something.
This is like Deadpool. Like, the Deadpool is actually guilty of this.
Yeah. Deadpool's the most recent example. And the idea of fridging comes from a Green Lantern comic where Green Lantern comes home and, you know, and he's ready to, like, get his steak on and maybe, like, you know, get his HJ on, but he sees a note.
Lord alive.
But he sees "surprise for you" in the fridge, and he opens the refrigerator, and it's his dead wife.
Oh.
And then
fridging.
He's like, oh, okay, fuck, I'm gonna go kick some ass because they killed my bitch, you know. So
whoa. Wow.
So, you got intense. I liked it.
And you see that a lot in movies, like, now it's personal, you know.
They killed my wife.
It's called fridging.
Killed my wife. Prepare to die. Or daughters too. Like, you know, or, you know, like Taken.
Oh,
you
yeah.
took my daughter, who is now just like a whiny, crying like thing that you kidnapped. But I'll come kill you now.
Yeah. Well, it's like the trope that you hear of, like, where men are like, you know, I didn't think about this stuff until I had my daughter, and now I actually care if women get raped. Like, wow, you're a fucking hero.
What's your wife think?
Yeah, what does your wife seriously. Think that it took your daughter to realize that women should have agency?
Yeah, and this article I do read here, like, they point out Batman.
Like,
they do
Death
make,
Wish.
Yeah.
Death Wish. Death Wish. Oh, my God.
I mean, that's canon films, though. I mean, that is exploitation.
No,
max.
But what I mean is, like, you want to talk about your fridging?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That whole movie right there is fridging to the nth degree.
I think by the fifth one, they brought his wife back from the dead just to kill her again. But... They do bring up, like, Batman, like, a death in the family. They do say that, like, oh, you know, there is fridging, like, with somebody like Robin. But they are quick to point out that if you look at The Killing Joke, like, a death in the family was a long, nuanced storyline that happened over a long period of time. But then caused Robin to be killed to influence Batman. In The Killing Joke, Joker just shows up and shoots Barbara in the pussy. And, like,
it
out of nowhere.
Shoot her in the pussy.
In her ovaries, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
Her pelvis area.
I mean, mostly her spine, though, y'all, because
spine.
She gets paralyzed.
Well,
it's in the stomach.
You guys can't get me started on The Killing Joke because I think it's so problematic and fucked up and absolutely damaging. I can't. Mm-mm.
Well, the creator has kind of disowned it. Alan Moore, who's one of the most prolific comic writers.
He should have.
But moving on here, the woman who only has an adventure because her kids are dead. And this is one that I was reading about. I was like, what, is that a thing? And that's really a thing.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely. Where,
what's an example of that?
Gravity.
Oh.
Sandra Bullock decided to take this risky adventure because her child had died, and George Clooney did it because he's George Clooney.
Also,
sorry, I stole that from the article, so sorry, article.
Also, I would like to note that even though Gravity is mostly centered on a female character, you know, female actress, I would not consider this movie to be that feminist, even though she's a strong character. because the solution to her problems comes out of George Clooney's mouth. Like, fuck that.
She has a delusion where she's mansplained to.
Yes. Yeah. Like, whose deepest fantasy is to be mansplained to in fucking space?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say that this is a good example of, you know, possibly, you know, problematic because her kid died and that's the only reason why she's a hero. But it's a stronger female character and it is a movie that focuses on a female character, but it's not feminist.
Well, that's a big, this is like part of a larger social problem, right? The idea is that women can't go off and do amazing things because they have children to raise, but the men can.
You can't be soft and strong at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Like, oh, you can't go out to do that. You have to raise babies. Well, don't the fathers have to do that too? Why do they get to go off?
Nope. No, because when the dads do it, they're helping out. Oh, yeah. He's such a good husband. He helps me with the baby. I'm sorry. Did he not create it with you?
Another one here. The sexy woman with the mind of a toddler. Like the fifth element rule.
Oh.
Fifth element.
Or mannequin.
Or I would argue Willie Scott in Indiana Jones. She's beautiful, but she is absolutely fucking useless, like a toddler.
No. I think they literally mean the mind of a toddler, like in Fifth Element.
Okay.
The character is essentially kind of like born yesterday.
Oh, and childlike. I didn't see Fifth Element, so I'm out of my
mind. That would be kind of like your manic pixie dream girl trope.
Yeah.
Basically. A little bit.
But yeah, they're essentially like an animal. They just kind of like make noises and they have like their eyes are all buggy and they're like, oh, help me. I'm completely helpless.
I need to be taken care of. I need to be rescued.
Which is kind of creepy because it's like a sexy baby.
Mm-hmm. It's gross.
Yeah.
It's gross. you dudes are gross.
You know, you have that in, I hate to say it because I love it so very much, the original Planet of the Apes, Nova.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true. You know, true.
Mind of a toddler, sexy. You have the woman who can't stop thinking about her tits and ass because she's written by a dude.
What's the example of that? It kind of reminds me of the whole author thing on Twitter where this male author said like writing women isn't that hard and you should be able to do it. And the way he wrote women, like everybody went after him so hard. It was so amazing.
I'm sorry. I think it is extremely difficult to write women, especially when
and this guy did it so poorly and he was being so imperious about it. It was fantastic. Well, people tore him to shreds.
Well, I'm just so glad I have you because I can't write women and I don't pretend that I can.
Oh, yeah.
So I just write them as like dudes and I hand it to you and be like, make them ladies. But can we just mark that real quick? Can we take out where I said, hold on, guys, because you actually picked up the slack right there, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
Because that was me kind of breaking the fourth wall there.
That's fine.
Okay.
But here's an example. George R.R. Martin, when he introduced his 13-year-old,
So this is author of Game of Thrones.
Yep.
Daenerys Targaryen.
How do you say her last name? Do you know?
It's Targaryen.
Targaryen, but it's Daenerys. Right?
Sorry for all the Game of Thrones fans. Yeah,
that's okay.
Like, how can you fuck up her name, asshole?
He feels
that's
the need
my to, dream girl.
He feels the need to point out that her small breasts move freely under her vest.
Yep.
Oh, good to know.
Good to know. Well, we need to know that, right?
Because he gets like a half a stiff and he's like, yeah.
Well, I feel like the existence of dragons and the invention of the bra are not two things that have intersected, personally.
No, not at all.
And then lastly, she's a strong female character without any strength or character, which is, I think, the ass kicker who
right, the mindless ass
object.
Kicker. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep, and that's not always the thing. I mean, you know, I would say... I don't know. I would say possibly the Angelina Jolie Tomb Raider character is guilty of that.
Oh yeah.
You know, where she is mindlessly ass kicking without any other elements of real character.
Well, the article brings up Trinity.
Oh God. Oh. From the Matrix.
She has no other character except being in love with Neo and shooting things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. And the whole thing with Trinity is that from the beginning of the movie until the very end of the first film, you know, it's just, oh, I don't want to love Neo, but I know I'm going to. Like, that's her whole character.
No woman has ever said that about Keanu Reeves. But I'm going to.
But that's the thing. Everyone points at to Trinity. I'm like, no, you don't get it. Like, Trinity is kind of the opposite in that because all she does is shoot guns and love Neo, but not want to love him.
Yeah. Which leads us to, I think, like,
you know, kind of its own talking point in of itself. So, Lane, I want to get your opinion on the woman ass kicker as sex object, what I like to call the sucker punch rule.
Yeah, so I think that, again, you know, we make the distinction just because a character is, you know, presented as an ass kicker or presented as, you know, a strong quote unquote character, that doesn't necessarily, you know, make them a good example even for, you know, for young women and whatnot. I would say, you know, one of the tropes that you described, I think, you know, Beatrix Kiddo, the bride from, you know, Kill Bill, like she's only a hero because she thinks her child is dead. You know, that's and that's what sets off this whole chain of events. You know, another one that I think is a little problematic that you guys might be surprised at is, you know, is Katniss Everdeen.
Yeah.
I think because, really? Well, because so she's a strong female character, but the films aren't really that female forward. You know, she is manipulated and is slaved by all these other male characters. And I tend to be harsher on films where a strong, like, romantic plot line, or in this case, like a love triangle is strongly played, because they're saying, oh yeah, she's strong, but don't worry, she still wants that D, everybody. You know, I feel that undermines like the strength of the character. Swan. Yeah, a lot. I think that undermines. I mean, don't get me started on fucking Twilight. We're not here to talk about Twilight. That's an episode in and of itself. But I think that that's what's problematic about Katniss, is that they, especially in the movies, really emphasize that love triangle aspect, because, you know, they don't want her to be too strong. They don't want her to be too independent. She still needs a man. We just don't know which one. And I don't like that.
Now, I'm okay if they actually do include some romantic element, as long as it's not the main focus of that character.
You know, it's not Baby Driver.
Yeah, yeah.
Where she's his prize.
Exactly. Right? Like, I don't. When we're talking about strong female characters, like I have my list has one character in particular that at the end of the movie does decide that she does want to have a relationship, even though the whole movie you're like, that's not her, and it ends with her basically, you know, finding out that the relationship's not gonna work, and decides. That she's moving forward. And I'll get to that in a minute. But I think some people think if you have a strong female character, there can't be any romantic element at all. I don't think that's realistic. You know, I think human beings, by just their very nature, see some element of romance and relationships in there. I just think it's a matter of not making it the central focus of the character.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll rebut that a little bit, just to kind of like play the flip side of that coin, Brian. Like,
okay.
I think it's, you know, for a lot of people, yeah, they do end up falling in love, and you can be strong and fall in love. Like, I mean, I consider myself a strong woman, but like I fell in love when I was 21, you know, like
right.
with this idiot. No, I'm just kidding. I love you, babe.
That's fair.
I love you, babe. But, you know, I don't think that the two are, you know, not mutually exclusive, but I don't think that they're mutually like prohibitive. You know, you can have both,
right?
But what films typically end up telling us, and they do tell us things, especially women, is that they need that man. They need that relationship, especially because they're always portrayed as heterosexual relationships, which is also incorrect to the standards of today anyway. But they say you need that man, you need that love, you're not whole without it. And that's what we're always told as women, is that you're not whole without a man,
right?
Which is problematic and untrue for a myriad of reasons, including the reasons of, you know, not everyone is heterosexual, but also we don't need men necessarily.
Well, for every woman, she can't fill a hole without a man.
Sorry.
Why are you this way?
No,
but
seriously, folks, like, I think relationships in movies, they need to be earned and not just given.
Right.
Like, people just freaked out at me when I said I didn't really like Baby Driver. And one of the problems I had with it is that he had a pussy trophy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She didn't have much of a character. He just, like, he wasn't a very good person, and he wanted it and he got it. And then he goes to, sorry if you haven't seen Baby Driver, skip ahead 10 seconds. Don't turn it off. Just skip ahead 10 seconds. He goes to jail and she just waits for him, even though he doesn't even have that much of a character. And she's there when he gets out of jail, and he's like, oh, look, my pussy's still here. Like, it's shameless. But
right.
Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, does a good job on this. And there's a lot of people that say, why aren't Star-Lord and Gamora together? Well, she's dead now.
spoiler alert! But,
you know, they make a good point, is that Star-Lord isn't mature enough yet to deserve her. You know, maybe they'll get together in the third one.
you know, or well, even
in
the fourth
in,
one.
In but Infinity he's not War, there yet. In Infinity
but isn't
War,
that isn't that saying
of,
that like he still does eventually earn her like an object, like a trophy? I mean, if you,
you
put it in,
you earn things by yeah. maturity,
possibly. But I mean, it still makes her the prize at the end. I mean, he's just going to put what maturity coins into the vending machine of life, and eventually
where,
her vagina is going to pop
where,
out
where,
as his prize.
Where can
like,
I get these maturity coins?
But,
yeah, right?
But you know what I mean? Like, I mean,
I want a green chick.
That is still setting it up that no. she is the object of his desire, oh, I, and that's right. that makes her the object.
I definitely get it, and I mean, this is Marvel and Disney we're talking about here, not exactly the poster children for representation.
Nope.
But I think what's interesting about that is it's the exact opposite of like what they did with Black Widow, where Black Widow in up until Age of Ultron was, in my regard, a pretty strong female character. You know, she didn't really need anyone. She doesn't really need a man to be as strong as she is. She does kick ass. And what do? In Age of Ultron, they make her weak. They suddenly bring up the fact, oh, she can't have kids and she's
right?
a monster.
But you mean from Lady Expert Joss Whedon?
Yes.
God.
But like, that's my point is they, in one movie, they completely fucked her character up to the point where.
She also wants that Hulk D.
She does want that Hulk D.
And
you
she's
know,
like, why won't you be with me? Because I'm a giant evil monster. So what?
Or it's like, if I have sex with you, my penis will rip you apart. Yeah. Like literally, rip you apart.
Well, in the first Avengers, wasn't she kind of into like Mr. Hawkeye. Bow and Arrow? Yeah, Hawkeye,
Mr. Bow and Arrow. But my
well,
point.
The problem is too yeah. because of her own inner turmoil. I mean, the film got caught, you know, in a lot of crossfire for this because it was, you know, a very antiquated stance. Because not only, you know, do we find out in that movie that she was rendered sterile as a part of her training, but how torn up she is over it. And, you know, and I'm not saying that there's one way to be a woman, but I felt like the movie was telling us that there's one way to be a woman, and she felt that she was less of a woman because she couldn't have kids, and that's not true.
Can well, I say something?
Oh, go ahead.
A lot of the flack came from her saying I'm a monster, but I really, really do not think that she was saying I'm a monster because I can't have kids.
No,
she was saying it because they trained her to be a cold-blooded murderer.
I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that, but I also think that her like pain and turmoil of not being able to have kids, like I think was just like a very easy trope. Because, you know, and again, everyone's different. I'm not trying to generalize any woman's experience. But I personally, if I found out that I was sterile, right? No. Yeah. Are you guys sterile?
And barren. I'm
barren?
You're infertile.
I'm barren? You're infertile? Barren. Okay. Anyway, if I found out that, like, I didn't have any eggs or something, it wouldn't
coffin.
Really bother me that much because kids aren't a part of my plan.
Right. But I think there's a way to go about it. Rather than wrapping it in a relationship taco.
Right.
Like, that's the whole thing, is they went ahead and said, oh, look at all this stuff about Black Widow. She's all broken up about this because she's, you know, barren and can't have kids and she's a monster. But it's all because of this relationship she wants to have with Hulk. And, that's the problem, is they didn't just have that sort of thing happen. Like, they didn't have scenes where maybe Black Widow is in the corner crying, not hanging out at the party, because the fact that all these memories of this shit happening to her are flooding her and coming back. You know? They didn't have to introduce this whole Hulk love romance triangle thing going on here to get to that. Like, there's other ways about it.
Well, too, like I said, you know, I'm sorry to cut you off, John. Just, I wanted to talk about, like, the idea of the character. I mean, this is the most of her character that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And for that to be, like, such a huge part of it when we don't know that much else about her. Like, you know, if I know that, like, she's all sad about her eggs, but I don't even know this character's favorite fucking color, like, that's a problem because you've not fleshed out the character enough.
That's right.
You've made it about her.
That's right.
You know, in one way. And I think that that's problematic.
I think Thor's favorite color is chartreuse.
And I think it undermines her, you know, her actual character.
Right.
Well, Lane, let me ask you. Do you think that that's just typical male perspective, that men just automatically think, oh, well, women, like, the greatest thing that they want to accomplish or do is make babies.
And if they can't, it's the worst thing ever. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that that's something that a man wrote. I don't think that that's something that a woman wrote. I really don't.
Well, it was woman expert Joss Whedon.
Except
when it comes to his wife.
God, I'm sad.
Keep paying the bills. I'm going to bone chicks on the road and live my fantasy. I'm sad and stuff. Drink more wine. You spend my money.
guys,
bitch!
You guys, I can't get started on. Can't get started on it.
Look, nope. Shut up, sugar tits. I'm trying to write Buffy because I'm in touch with women. Now go make me a sandwich.
Can y'all stop? Like, it hurts me because I love Buffy so much and I am so mad at him. I literally threw out all my Joss Whedon books. I was like, no. I can't. I was like, fuck it.
Because
it was like
you most of those.
Well, it was like you know, feminism and Joss Whedon, and I was like, that dude is not a fucking feminist. I mean, I didn't throw him out.
Burn him.
I sent him to like a trade in place, so like I got money back for him. Nice, but like job. Fuck him.
Because I think we got a little deviated here. We're talking about sex object as ass kicker. Is there any greater example than Lara Croft?
Yeah. I do think that that's true. I mean, especially because she was a video game character first. I mean, that's a world that is not known for its feminist, female-forward storytelling. It's a very male-dominated area. And, yeah, and you know, bro gamers, come at me. Don't give a shit. But the, you know, I think that what they ended up doing then, like I said, I mean, I just said Tomb Raider's Lara Croft was a problematic character in the Angelina Jolie iterations because she was just an ass kicker because she was, you know, and mm-hmm. and then they made her really smart, and that was supposed to be like, you know,
she's wearing more a lab coat in the scene,
right, you know, or she's like fluent in like ancient Sumerian, you know, like we're supposed to believe that, you know, as a part of her character, you know, especially using someone like Angelina Jolie, who is oftentimes objectified for her looks.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly, now this is diverging away from film, but I think that the new video games have done a good job of desexualizing her and changing her appearance.
I haven't seen the new Tomb Raider film.
It was terrible, but I loved it anyway. I enjoyed it. It was terrible, but I enjoyed it. But again, they did a pretty good job of that. I thought, you know, what I really liked about the movie was that there was no romantic element.
Okay.
Again, you don't need that D to be whole, ladies. But the, you know, but again, like it was very male driven though, because, you know, her father is missing. That's a huge plot point. All of the male or villains are male. Like, you know, there isn't really another woman throughout the film too much. I think it does pass the Bechdel test. Mm. But again, those parameters are very narrow. Yeah.
Yes, it does.
It does. Yeah. I mean, I
just saw it a second ago.
Well, I mean, I just, it does pass it, but you know, but again, like these margins are narrow, you know, they don't have to do much, but the fact that most movies can't even do this much is mind boggling to me.
Lane, can I ask you a side question here?
Yeah. What up?
This has always bothered me, and maybe I'm really overthinking this, but just to use an example, like the Power Rangers movie, take all the feelings out of that. But the guys have Power Ranger outfits that look like they are for utility. And then the ladies have basically the same outfits, but with like titties and curves. Like they should have, like they don't have a sexy fire lady outfit. I mean, outside of stripper clubs, like, you know, the lady firemen wear the same outfits as the male firemen.
Yeah.
Right.
So why don't they have the same outfit as the guys?
Oh, I mean,
why are they that form fitting that we have to see their titties?
Wasp,
and
like
and
last
butt?
Week's episode, Ant-Man and Wasp. Wait, her outfit is sexy as hell, right? Yeah. Shouldn't it be like Ant-Man's outfit and be for utility?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think like, I mean, you do kind of need a space for the girls, I suppose. But I mean, this is a very common trope where, you know, of course, like the woman, even if she kicks ass, like she's sexualized. I mean, there's a reason why Wonder Woman doesn't wear pants, guys. That's
and,
I mean,
and
that's
the thing is there. Well, there are versions of Wonder Woman where she does wear pants. And
yeah,
she does have more of a utilitarian type of costume.
That was a big thing, and that was a big controversy when she wore pants. Like,
but that's a big meme. I mean, like if male superheroes were dressed like female, I mean, like I've seen other iterations, especially with like video game ones.
Everybody, Lane just showed us an image of sexy men.
And I'll definitely put this up on our Instagram, guys, so you guys can see it because it's pretty funny. But again, too, like this is very common in video games, you know, where women are completely sexualized in their outfits, and that was, I think, where a lot of the Lara Croft stuff came from.
You could say that our good buddy Zack Snyder did do that with 300. The men were wearing, you know, skimpy outfits.
But that doesn't, I mean, that doesn't make it feminist, though.
Oh, no, not at all.
I mean, name a single female character from that film. Like, I forgot all of them.
There are none.
Right? Here we go.
Brian's like, here's a good example.
This is the one I was thinking of. If male video game.
Thing, there's a good example.
This is what I was thinking of. If male video game characters were dressed like female characters.
What the hell? That's a giant dong.
I mean, it's wrapped. It's not naked. I'm not showing you. Just, dear listeners, I'm not showing.
That is a giant
dog. But these memes, like, this is a thing because there's a horrible double standard.
Make sure to tune in next week for Lane shows images that you can't see.
I'm going to put it on our Instagram so that you guys know what we're talking about.
Our Instagram's going to get torn down.
I mean, maybe I'll, like, blur it out. I don't know. But anyway, but yeah, so I mean, like, I think that's a problem in the superhero kind of thing because honestly, like, I didn't realize like how like hungry I was for a real feminist superhero story until I saw the Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
Because like, all right, guys, I'm sorry. Like, just to like shit on things just a little bit.
That's cool. Please.
The beginning of Wonder Woman, where we are on the mascara, and it's just women in charge doing all these athletic things, and there just isn't a fucking dude in sight. Was like the most beautiful thing I've ever seen, because over and over again in films, we are told what we want. We are told who we are as women. But like that movie felt like who we are as women. Like for me, it felt like as a woman, like, and just like to not have a fucking dude explaining something to somebody was just so great.
Or even like to have
so much.
Even like to have that old sage who just gives you like who narrates the plot for you.
Right.
The
right.
old male sage who just says, thousands of years ago, blah, blah, blah.
It was, yeah.
You know, could you imagine that if there's just one elder on the island? It's like, the wise sage, the man. All the women are right? Like,
oh! But again, you know, like, I'm sure, like, you know, if someone's listening out there and they're like, oh, well, fuck you. Like, there can be guys in movies too. But, like, that's all I see all fucking day, every day. I don't see the representation of just women, even though that's oftentimes my experience. I mean, I get together with just my female friends sometimes, and there is a very special energy that does come from that.
Okay.
You know, and to see that on screen, like, I didn't realize how much it meant to me until I was watching it, and just, I just felt this amazing feeling of, like, being seen. And that's all anybody wants to see, and it reflected in their art. They want to feel seen, and I did, and it was absolutely amazing.
So I know John and I, we were told to come up with 5 female characters from movies.
And I'm going to shit on them whether
and
I like them or not.
You're going to shit on them whether you like them or not.
No, okay. I thought it'd be cool.
So I got 5 and you're probably going to hate them.
Well, we'll talk about them. Let's talk about
okay.
them.
Okay. So do you want me to go first, John?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead, Brian. Hit me.
My first one is Ellen Ripley, which is kind of everyone's go to,
mm-hmm.
But only from the first Alien.
Okay.
Because I think they fucked up her character in Aliens. Yeah.
They made her a mommy.
Yeah.
Which was the problem.
And I can see how she
lost her child, so she went on a great adventure.
That's right.
And I can see how she makes a lot of these lists. My only contention with Ellen Ripley is that she doesn't have a ton of other character other than just kicking ass.
In the first Alien, she pretty much is takes over the ship.
But like, she's not fleshed out. Like, we don't know her. We don't, you know, see her entirely.
She takes command of a lot of situations.
She does.
Like, she quarantines the ship and does not let the...
You guys aren't listening. She's not a fully fleshed out character. Okay. She's just taking charge and kicking ass because the script calls for it. She's not a full person. She doesn't feel organic and real. I mean, she does, you know, take charge of the situation, but that's also a very common 80s trope, like the bossy woman. You know, she's not necessarily, like, backed by other women in this case.
No, boiling. I really don't. Because, okay, here's the thing. You compare her to the other female character that was on that crew.
Right.
Who would be more or less the...
She was useless.
She was useless trope.
Yeah.
And you also have to think about the time that this movie came out. Okay,
1979.
So this is 1979 we're talking about here.
Right.
Okay, typically in movies like this, the female characters weren't the heroes of these horror films.
Well, I'm being hard on it. I know that. I'm being hard on it because
kind of the way I look at it.
But again, like, for me, I'm not just going to give it a pass because of its time, though. Yeah. Because for me, for there to be a strong woman character in 1979 and for that to be groundbreaking, like, that to me is pathetic. Anyway, so I have a hard time with that anyway.
I do think it's interesting that Ellen Ripley was originally written as a man and they didn't change anything about the character except the gender.
That's pretty great.
Yeah.
I mean, that is great. I mean, like I said, I would want a little bit more from the actual character aspect. But, I mean, the strength I have no problem with. And the way that it plays out in the film is good.
Next on my list, again, you're probably going to hate this one, is Selina Kyle in Batman Returns.
Overly sexualized.
Oh,
and
come on!
And the trope of
Ryan, I got to fight you on that one, too. She's nothing but just like... horny psychopath.
Well, no, and the trope of woman is crazy because, you know, she goes nuts in the movie.
She takes control of her own destiny in it.
But
Batman offers to have a relationship with her and take her to his castle, and she says, fuck you, I'm doing my own thing.
But she's pulled around by every man in the movie.
Well, she kills herself.
No, she doesn't kill herself.
Well, there's that scene at the end that doesn't count.
That counts.
We never got a movie out of it.
Yeah, it's true.
No, we did.
I mean, but no, but she's...
Which will be in about 3 weeks.
She doesn't have as much agency as you think, though, because her circle of being comes about because of Max Schreck. She is led around, like, she partners up with the Penguin, and, you know, she's obsessed with Batman / Bruce Wayne, basically, like, trying to foil him. Like, she doesn't really have her own character or her own goals. She's just led around by the men in the film.
No, I get your point, and I definitely see it. But I also have to take into consideration the fact that she does decide, like, as I said, at the end of the movie, she decides not to do what, I guess, throughout the whole movie she wanted, was to have that relationship with Bruce Wayne Batman.
She decides
to do her own thing.
And I respect that, but just saying no to the D doesn't necessarily make you a feminist character or a strong character. Now, the Selina Kyle character, you know, in some iterations of Batman, like, I can see being more feminist, especially there's an iteration of her where she is a lesbian, right?
Frank Miller.
Oh, so it's like fetishized.
Yeah,
perfect.
Yeah, pretty much.
But
she's,
you know,
also a whore.
I think that the
a literal whore.
Yeah, but that necessarily doesn't bother me. I mean, you know, sex work is really stigmatized. So, but I think it can be feminist in some considerations.
I mean, from Frank Miller's
point of view. Yeah, well, Frank Miller's an asshole, and none of his stuff is feminist in any stretch. But I think she's overly sexualized, Brian.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I have to vote
that
one down too.
All right, I have
Elaine craps on everything.
Crap on this next one. Furiosa from Mad Max Fury Road.
I don't have a huge problem with that one. That one's okay. That one's okay.
Thank you.
I mean, I think that character, as far as a lot of these go, is just because it's so far outside of you know, the realm of everything. I think that it's hard to put it in like a real context because you know, this is a very dystopian kind of world that it's hard to picture. So I think the reactions of people are a little different.
I compare her to the personalities of the brides in that film.
Yeah. Oh,
and
yeah.
She is absolutely 100% strong. And Max becomes kind of the side character
in his own movie.
Absolutely. And I think that, again, like, I mean, I think that it was a great performance by Charlize Theron. I think that, you know, it is a good example. Like, I have no problem with that because I think that there are elements of strength, but she also does take on a little bit of the elements of like caretaker because she is ensuring everyone's safety.
Yeah.
And I think that that's important. You know, the two, you know, you can be strong and soft. You don't have to be one or the other, and your strength can be in your softness. Yeah. So.
Okay. My next one is, again, probably from a director who really doesn't get women. Beatrix Kiddo from Kill Bill.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, I think it falls into the trope of she's only a hero because her kid died. You know, I think that there are good elements there, but too, one of the things we haven't talked about yet, but I think, you know, strong women characters, a lot of times that's portrayed in women on women crime.
Okay.
And I don't think that that's particularly helpful or feministic either, because, you know, women do tend to take each other down, and it's not productive, and it doesn't, you know, serve any greater, points of feminism. And so when you think about that movie and how it's a lot of just like bitch fighting, basically,
I think it
takes away.
I don't know. I get the idea of the revenge film, especially being kind of susceptible to these tropes that you're talking about.
Right.
You know? I don't see her revenge. I don't see her revenge completely motivated by her kid dying. Okay,
I can see that.
It's more or less that her own people decided that she could not get out of the life that she was in, and decided to kill not only her. They tried to kill her. They tried to kill her family, her friends, and her soon-to-be husband. So that's kind of what led to it. You know, that's what led to that revenge.
I can see that. I can see that.
What about the idea of a strong female character in a kind of sexist movie, to be
It happens. Yes. I mean, I've seen it.
Does that kind of undermine everything? Because like
I've seen it.
What does she fight? A young Japanese girl who looks underage in a schoolgirl outfit. Sexy. You know, it's like,
right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it could be possible to have a strong character and for the rest of the film to be kind of, you know.
That's what I'm saying. I think she is a strong female character. You might say that, you know, like other thing too is, when is she ever talking about her relationship in that film?
Never. Right. I mean, but again, like
well,
the
she
absence...
had a relationship with Bill though, didn't she?
Yes,
she
did. But that's not the focus of the movie. Yeah.
I mean, it eventually becomes, though, when we realize that her child is alive. Spoiler alert from 1999. But
2003 and 2005.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah.
I thought it was 90s. Oh, no, you know what? I was in college, so you're
99
right.
99 was Jackie Brown, I think. Yep.
That's right. That's right. But yeah, I mean, I think you can have... The absence of a romantic relationship doesn't necessarily make a film feminist, and the presence of one doesn't necessarily mean the opposite. You know, I have no problem with relationships being in films.
Okay.
It just depends on whether that's the woman's goal or not, or if she has other goals in the film and has her own character.
Okay. And my last one, I don't know if you've seen this movie, these series of movies or not, but I have Lisbeth Salander from Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh yeah, I am. So I
and
saw
I'm talking about
yeah
the I series of
I saw the Fincher Dutch one films. And I'm reading the books still kind of I started like the first one and the second one but yeah, I mean I could see that, you know, I can't speak to that too much because I didn't see the Swedish films. I heard they're great.
They're amazing.
I heard they're much better than the Fincher first one that he did. But yeah, I mean I'd be curious to kind of see more of that, you know, where, you know, it seems to me that this character has her own objectives and
she absolutely does. I mean, the scene I love the scene where she because she's a hacker for a software company.
Right.
And she's also under legal guardianship. And her legal guardian is a sadist and a rapist who takes advantage of her entire, you know, basically adolescence and adult life.
That's so gross.
And the one scene where she basically sodomizes him.
Yeah, there's a similar scene in the Fincher one.
Him.
Hard to watch.
Oh, it's much better.
With a cactus, right?
Or is no, it was an anal plug.
Anal plug.
Yeah.
Okay. And then tattoos on his chest, I'm a sadistic pig and a pervert and a rapist, while he's agonizing and taped and duct taped down. It's amazing. Like her character's amazing. Also, you want to talk about agency? She initiates kind of a relationship with mostly a sexual relationship with the main character, Michael Blomkvist.
Right.
And when I made mention of, and she was like, this is really just a thing. It's not a relationship. Don't even think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, when I made mention earlier in the episode about I have a character who wouldn't even think about having a relationship, and she eventually, at the end of it, decides she does, it's her. Because at the end of the movie, she acknowledges that she's fallen in love with Michael, but on her way to tell him, she finds that she sees him with his former lover. And decides that
Fincher movie ends that way too.
It's the same thing, but I liked the fact that she decides when she wants to have a relationship. She decides when
you don't
she
see that a lot.
Wants to get revenge. And it's not just, oh, we both came together, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And it's really, it makes a very strong character. And that's why she honestly is the one who kind of takes over for the series. Like, she becomes the main protagonist.
That's cool.
Through the other films.
That's cool. Cool.
So,
good list.
Lane, to ask you a question on that, what do you think of the, and I know this is a brand new question. We've talked about this constantly on this podcast about using the rape convention for, then she goes and gets her sweet revenge against the rapist.
Well, I mean, you know, we've seen that before, you know, especially in more exploitative films like I Spit on Your Grave is a good example of the revenge from rape scenario. I think it's character to character. I mean, I know that it's not the entirety of the movie. She has other goals in it's Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. That's the first one,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's not her entire goal. It wasn't in the Fincher movie either. It's not in the book either. You know, so I mean, if it's not the entire
rape
plot
stuff's in there.
I mean, it's not the entirety of her character.
Oh, yeah,
it's not
yeah,
the entire
no.
point of the film.
No.
I think like the issue is of focus and of, you know, the time spent. So I think right. that makes a big difference.
I feel that that's something very unique to women, though. It's like you look at like Commando. It's like the kid, they've tracked him down. They came to his home. They took his daughter. Now he gets revenge. Let's just imagine that movie a little differently. They came to his home. They tracked him down. They raped his butt. Now he's out for revenge.
I'm not going to see that
it
movie.
It sounds ridiculous.
I don't want Arnold getting ass raped.
You know? Nobody wants to see anyone being ass raped, I would like to say. And I would like to say that I think the presence of rape in film is you know, something that should be handled a lot more delicately and sparingly than it is, because I'm not sure that it necessarily serves any greater purpose in art. But that's another day for another podcast.
Yeah. So, John, you got your list.
Can I crap on yours too now, hon?
She's going to crap on yours.
So excited.
I just feel that there's like our Gamergate male audience is like, fuck this episode. So, this bitch.
I welcome the ads. Come at me, bro.
All right. I have
on Twitter only.
I have for consideration next time. I have an extra one here.
Okay. Well, just give me your list.
All right. Leia Organa Before Jedi. I have for.
Yeah. I think noting Before Jedi is really important, though. Yep. Though some of the moments in Empire where she is being like kissed against her will, it's not good. It's not good writing. It makes me uncomfortable now.
All right. So my list here, I have Maggie Fitzgerald from Million Dollar Baby.
Okay. Yeah. We talked about this last night. I've actually not seen Million Dollar Baby, but, why don't you give me the reasons why?
Well, her whole goal is to be a boxer and
right.
to be great.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she had a shitty upbringing and she knows she's a fighter and she wants to be a good fighter. And she pushes Clint Eastwood. Hey,
I don't train girls.
Which is I don't train girls in case you couldn't decide.
In case you couldn't. You're not fluent in old man.
Yeah. and so but he decides to take her on and she becomes great. Now, at the end of the movie, once again, spoiler alert, she gets paralyzed. And all she ever wanted to be was a boxer. And if she has to spend the rest of her life as a vegetable with the kind of family she has,
mm-hmm.
that she asked Clint, her manager, you know, slash, you know, father figure in this
right.
story, to take her life.
Right.
And unplug in the her. End, he does, you know,
right.
because she doesn't want to live that way.
Agency, so, which isn't yeah. always seen that easily. Totally.
You know, so that's my
right.
number five.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
Sorry, it's hard, I know, to talk about these if you haven't seen them, but this one's cheating. I have Thelma and Louise.
Burr, burr, burr.
Yeah.
Cool. I think that that's fair.
You know, but here's the problem, though, is a lot of people are like, which one's Louise and which one's Thelma? People get them confused quite a bit. I have Sarah Connor from Terminator 2, not Terminator 1.
Right. You know, but you know what's interesting about that? She had more character in the first one. She had interests and friends. And like, it's interesting to me that like the foil of Olive Skynet is kind of robotic herself.
Well, what's
and doesn't have much character besides Sarah, kicking ass.
What's interesting about Sarah Connor is I view that as more of a transformation for her. Like, in the beginning of the film, yeah, she has characters and friends, but she's more concerned about, who I'm going to go on a date with and blah, blah, blah. And it really isn't towards the end of the movie after Kyle Reese has died, and she then becomes the soldier that we see in Terminator 2. Becomes that person with agency,
yeah.
becomes that more feminist hero.
Yeah,
by
but
the
like,
second film.
But she loses almost like elements of her humanity. Like, you don't see her really relating to any other living thing after
yeah.
that.
But
you
she
know?
Gets him back. That's her whole arc, is that she learns to, like, you know, love and be affectionate to John because she had lost that.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean,
do
it
you
does.
Cry?
It does come back.
Why
I,
do
I
you
could
cry?
I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah, what's wrong with your eyes? Number two, Marge Gunderson from Fargo.
Oh yeah, cause,
yeah.
Well, because she like does the damn thing, and she's pregnant the whole time. That's
yep.
a good one, John. I like
yeah.
that.
You okay there, Margie?
Yeah, I just think I'm getting birth.
And you know, and I want to get your take on this. Like, not only is she very good at her job, and you know, and very brave, but she's also like a very good wife in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you have to be like
good wife. How?
She's like she has, well, her and her husband have a very good relationship.
She has a, they have a healthy relationship with her husband.
Yeah. And I think that that's nice. I think that can be really feminist to see good examples of a relationship functioning.
But it has very little to do with the movie. Like, you only really see him kind of towards the beginning and end, but, you know, it's, so it's not crucial to the story, but it's like, oh, you know, she's
right,
more than just this detective unraveling this horrible.
And that's what
story.
I like to see, fully fleshed out women, you know, especially in films like that, you know.
And my last one here is Lane Hansen from The Contender.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I never saw that movie.
Oh, well, I love Joan Allen, like, regardless of, I mean, just, I fucking love her. So that's like, that's a kind of an easy one. But yeah, I mean, I think that that's an example of too, like, how the world really still is, even 18 years later. I mean, like, there'd be so much backlash over trying to put a woman in charge of the country.
Well, yeah, because she's running for vice president, and there's these hearings whether she, you know, should deserve the nomination, because there's a supposed scandal, like a sexual scandal, but it's not really a scandal. It's just like they're kind of playing off the Clinton era kind of thing.
Okay. Right.
Like, I think there was some tape of her in like a gangbang in college or whatever. Like,
and yeah, I was going to say, like, that's apparently weird. That shit doesn't really matter nowadays.
Yeah, I'm forgetting the exact details. But the thing is, she fights and fights and fights. And then at the very end, like, she is allowed to have the nomination for vice president, but then they find out that the tape was fake or never was real to begin with. And they said, you know, why didn't you fight this in the sense of, you know, that the tape wasn't real? And she basically makes the point, because I shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That wasn't the point, whether the tape was real or not. It was that they were coming after me for having consensual sex, and I'm a woman in power. Like, ooh, how scary and awful. You know, so.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's an unexpected pick, John, but that's a good one. I don't think I've seen that movie since it came out. So it's been almost 20 years.
I think I saw it in 2008, the last time I saw it. So it's been like a decade.
Wow. It's still been a decade for you. That's crazy. Wow. So that's, I mean, that's for, are those were good picks. I mean, I thought those were good ones, dude.
Cool.
I did think those were good ones. Now I picked a few, that I think you guys might find unexpected, because for me, I thought that a lot of strength in characters, you know, could be emotional strength. Like, I think that the trope that, like, you have to put a woman in spandex to make her an ass kicker, I think is kind of, you know, kind of ill-informed.
Yeah.
And I think that there are some all-women movies or mostly women-led movies that I think do show portrayals of strong women. And more importantly, like I said before, and we didn't get into it in too much detail, but I think really important aspects of strong female characters are women who build up other women, you know, and even if it's girls, if they're younger, you know, girls supporting girls, you know. Now, obviously, again, the books do a better job of this than the movies. The movies are okay, but The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, I think, is a good example, because it shows how girls and women fight, and it shows how they still stay friends. Now, an important thing about this, though, is that they all have some issues, especially in the first one, that do not center around boys, you know, because that's very common in, like, teen movies, you know, but it deals with really serious things. You know, one of the characters has a terminally ill friend. Another character is trying to fit in, like, with her parents' divorce and her dad remarrying. You know, it's other issues besides, like, oh, that boy doesn't like me. John and I fought tooth and nail about this the other night, but I think Clueless is a good example of feminism, and we disagree fundamentally. But I think that Cher Horowitz is a good example of a character who genuinely wants to be a better person and is limited perhaps by her own shallowness to know what that really means. Cause John and I, we disagreed. You know, you said, John, that you think she only does things because it makes her feel good. I think she does things because she is trying to better herself. And you know, too,
do things to get the boy.
I mean, in some instances, yes, but I think what was a strong part of her character is that the object of her affections turns out to be gay, and she doesn't bat an eye. Like, I think that that's, like, an important thing. No, she doesn't feel rebuffed.
But
she doesn't,
doesn't,
like,
she, like, that's one guy that she goes for, but yeah. Doesn't she eventually, like,
Paul Rudd.
Go for Paul Rudd?
Well, and you know, it's interesting because that's a more organic situation. You know, she goes after Christian personally, because, you know, she has a crush on him, and when it doesn't work out, you know, she kind of just organically spends a lot of time with Josh. That's Paul Rudd's character's name, and they just sort of end up together. You know, it's more organic than that. It's not something that she manipulated or fought her way through. Okay. You know, I do think that it's a strong character. I think Amy Heckerling did a good job.
Well, to me, she's decided what's best for everybody.
In a way. I mean, in a way,
instead
but I mean,
letting them decide.
But that doesn't necessarily not make her a strong female character. It may just may not make her like a good protagonist in your eyes. You know?
I would say that's more or less the truth.
But like I said,
because there are things that she does like with her her friend. I forget what her
with
name
Ty. Is. With the makeover? I mean,
yeah, where they're like, oh, you don't want to date this guy. He's a skater guy. Right. You don't want to be with him. But
right.
With this guy, he's a slime ball.
And we need to make you look more appropriate to our school.
Right. Yeah, I mean, she, the whole thing with Elton, like, that was Cher's mistake. But I mean, as soon as Elton revealed himself to be a predator, like, that was that. Like, she didn't still push Ty on him or anything. Like, I mean, it had blown up anyways. But, well, you know, I think that was a good example.
At the end of the day, she's a virgin that can't drive.
But I mean, I think the way that they wrap everything
matters.
Up, I think they do prioritize friendship, you know, the way that they present the film. And like I said, I genuinely think that she does things because she wants to better herself and the world around her, you know, whether that's, you know, disagreement. I think that that makes, you
and
know,
Stacey Dash a needs difference. To win somewhere.
Oh man, Stacey freaking Dash. You know, I think Bridesmaids is another good example of like strong female characters. I wouldn't count, Kristen Wiig's character as a strong female character because a lot of the film is about her trying to find strength again, you know, and she makes a lot of mistakes. But I think that, you know, that does prioritize friendship and the element that it is like girl on girl crime with Rose Byrne's character where they're kind of like pitted against each other. That is a major plot point, but they do eventually resolve it like adults, you know, so I think that that counts for a lot of it. Okay. But some of the characters that I came up with, you know, I think maybe would be a little surprising. Obviously, at the top of my list is Hermione Granger. I'm obviously more fond of her from the books, but I think that a really strong example of Hermione's strength is in Deathly Hallows 2 when she wipes out her parents' memories. Or is that, maybe that's Hallows 1. I always mess those up. Because
no,
it's like,
the second one. It's the very beginning of the second movie.
That's what I thought.
Movie.
Okay. But when she, yeah, when she obliviates her parents, I mean, to completely wipe your parents' memories of any memory they have of you.
Wow.
As an only child with a good relationship with her parents. Like, I mean, I relate to that really strongly. Mm-hmm. It makes me cry every fucking time when you see her like disappear from the photos and stuff. I think that took an you know, insurmountable amount of strength. Surprisingly, the Harry Potter movies are not, they don't pass the Bechdel test, or if they do, it's like for really stupid reasons, because a lot of the times everything centers around Harry, which is, you know, a male character, which I think is unfortunate because the books do a much better job of showing us the female characters.
The story is called Harry Potter.
But it is, but I mean, you know, but Hermione kicks ass. She's pretty much better than Harry in every single way.
Okay.
I think another good example.
We can
of
all
a,
agree Ron's not better than anyone.
I think, I think a really good example of a strong female character also is Moana. You know, because at the end of the day, she goes on this quest to restore the heart to Tafiti, but what ends up restoring the heart is her humanity, is her empathy, is her kindness. You know, she realizes that Te Ka is actually Tafiti, and she goes to show softness, and that is, you know, a form of strength. You know, I like that it wasn't just being overpowered, and she didn't just like beat the villain or beat up the bad guy. You know, she let her guard down and she showed humanity. I think that's a good one. I think, surprisingly, I think Sarah Bailey from The Craft.
Yeah.
I think she's a good example. I have a lot of problems with this movie as a feminist construct, even though I love it because I'm a child of the 90s.
I love that movie.
It's a lot of girl and girl crime, which I don't like. It's a lot of ostracizing. It's a lot of mean girling. And and I remember reading, you know, in the Christine Taylor parts where she goes after Bonnie, I think.
Yep.
For, you know, for her blackness, basically. I mean, when she's
no,
so...
Bonnie was Neve Campbell.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Bonnie was Neve
so,
Campbell.
But when she goes after the other member of the coven, who's the other swimmer, when she goes after her for her blackness, and she's so racist. I remember reading that Christine Taylor like apologized to her after every take because she just felt so yucky about everything that was going on. I mean, it's hard to watch. You know, for some of the scenes of just how racist Christine Taylor's character is, you know, so I think it has a lot of problems in that sense because it reinforces the stereotypes that women backstab and women go after each other. But, you know, Sarah Bailey's, you know, she ends that cycle by stopping what they've been doing with their, you know, with their craft and everything. And she basically says no more. And at the end, you know, with the other two girls now, obviously she destroys Nancy, but with the other two girls, she says like, this isn't a thing anymore. So yeah. You know, and kind of ends that cycle. And then I also I have Dr. Ellie Sattler on my list from Jurassic Park. Because she just doesn't give any shits. Like, she does what she wants to do. And, you know, when they see the sick Triceratops, like, she's like, you know what, I'm going to stay with him. You know, it's full agency a lot of the time. And
she just wants Grant to give her a baby.
I don't think that that's true. I think that she wants Grant to change his mind about something that he's being very bullheaded about. And there's no sense that she necessarily wants to have kids. You didn't even know that they were together from this movie. So you can't really use that as an argument. Like, only John did he recently think that Grant and Sadler were together.
I'm 10 years deep on this knowledge. When I was a kid, I didn't think they were together.
But no, you argued with me as recently as last year about this shit.
Yeah, because it was fun.
Oh, because it was fun. Okay.
I didn't say that I was right. I just was giving examples of why I didn't think.
Okay.
They were together.
All right. Fair enough. But I mean, I do think that, like, when things go wrong, like, she doesn't shy away from the situation. She's, you know, head first. And then one of the best lines from the movie, I think, is we can discuss sexism in survival situations when I get back. I mean, that's a good one. That's a good one. So, yeah. So, I mean, that's good picks. Those are my picks. You know, obviously, I think for as far as Disney princesses go, I think Tiana is the most feminist, strongest of all of them. Yeah. Like, girlfriend just wants to start her own business. I think that's hella admirable.
So just to kind of wrap things up, Lane, what would you like to see, like, moving forward here for representations for women in film? And then we'll kind of...
I feel like we should just kind of take a look back at the 90s and look at those strong characters, because, like, 90s TV had so many good, like, really strong female characters. I think one of the most... Like, honestly, we didn't talk about television at all, but I think Lisa Simpson is one of the most, like, pinnacle, like, most shining examples of a really strong female character. You know, she always, like, sticks to her guns. Like, she always has, like, you know, her own opinions about things. And, you know, I think she's a really good example. Obviously, I'm a big fan of Scully from The X-Files, you know, another strong female character. I think that the 90s could really inform some of the writing moving forward. You know, John and I've been showing him Buffy when I have time. And I think, you know, again, Buffy's a good example of, you know, strong female characters, especially more than one, you know, more than just Buffy. I think we have good examples of women who are trying to do their best and are pretty well written to do so. You know, back before I was mad at Joss Whedon. Fuck that guy. Never meet your heroes, kids. Never meet your heroes. But I think, like, moving forward, if we kind of, you know, keep in mind that, like, women can, like you said, John, like, the Alien script was written for a man, and then she just played, you know, Sigourney Weaver. They didn't change the script, and she just played the character. I mean, let's just do that.
Yeah.
Because, like, we can be the same. It, you know, I mean, like, we have our unique strengths and weaknesses, but, like, let's just do that.
All right, now let me tell you why you're wrong.
No, you've got to say, well, actually, you're not a mansplayer.
Well, actually.
There you go. There you
Let
go.
Let me tell you how Let things really you. Are in
There
the
you
world.
Go. You nailed it.
Women are boobs for men to conquer.
Barf.
Oh, God. Well, this has been a hell of a discussion. I
know.
Say.
This was a good episode, you guys.
Good episode. Lane, where can they find you at on the Twitter machine?
God, I don't know if I should say on this episode. I have everyone coming after me. No, you can find me at LA_craft on Twitter.
John?
You can find me at make me a sandwich. On, no, I'm sorry.
Oh my God, that was amazing. Fuck you.
Good story, babe. Make me a sandwich.
Good story, babe.
There were guys at the Borough Party used to wear that t-shirt.
Oh, I know.
You can find me at The Unreal Jables.
You can find me at Brian Contos on the Psycho Show page. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Google+, at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network at epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or question you want to throw away, or I guess if you want to attack us for our support of feminist strong
characters. If you
characters,
want to attack us, I'm just going to say, why don't you just take a walk around the block and just, like, walk it off?
And when
if you want to have a thoughtful discussion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's do that.
Okay, if you want to have a thoughtful discussion, you can contact us at cinemapsychoshow.com. And make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and iTunes and catch a new episode available every other Sunday.
Guys, I can't wait for our next episode on Girls Gone Wild. It's going to be great.
Epicast. 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 Epicast.